Allow me to paint a picture for you. This has been a week. As some of you know, the man who fathered my children and who I co-parented with for 26 years and who was a dear friend has been in hospice the past 2 weeks, and before that 2 weeks in palliative care, and for months before that very sick at home. He died this week. My daughters and I have been caring for him in all three places. And as many of you know, it's a lot of work, physically, mentally, and emotionally. There are a number of people in this room who have experienced this type of caregiving, and I have enormous admiration for you. Now, I was a born caregiver, but I have learned a huge amount about caregiving in this past year. I have sat in the company of caregivers and listened to stories of the challenges, the sudden inexplicable shifts of health, the life and death decisions that need to be made, lives disrupted, families turned upside down. I have seen extraordinary people who have devoted themselves to the physical and emotional caring of another human being, or in some cases, to a pet, a family member of the four-legged variety. I have seen huge responsibility carried with equal portions of courage and love. I have seen how life can change in a moment. The unexpected does happen. Lives are changed. And I have seen these experiences transform people. I have seen the pressures and the demands of caregiving overwhelm, and I have seen new strengths discovered, new love kindled, new spiritual insights gained. Being a caregiver for the sick and the dying is hard work. You know, the last time I worked this hard was when my children were both under 3. It's a circle of care. We are cared for by our parents. Then we, in turn, care for them. In some cases. And in between these points of our life, between our being born and our dying, we care for friends and pets and communities and causes and the earth and ourselves. When you are born, you enter the developmental system of caring. According to the research by Robert Glatzer Levy and Bertrand Kohler, the human infant is designed to enter into relationship from the very first breath, I would suggest even before that. Infants can't survive outside a supportive environment, which must include other human beings. Therefore, one can never describe just a baby. Inevitably, one must describe the baby and someone else. A baby comes into the world looking all sweet and adorable, smelling good, designed to get parents' attention and to bond. The parents smile and coo and cuddle, and the baby learns to respond in kind with smiles and gurgles, and the caring cycle begins. When scientists ask the question, are humans innately selfish or altruistic? It was discovered that around the age of 2, the human child begins to feel the distress of others and the wish to help others emerges. In a 1977 study by Hoffman, it was shown that infants cry longer and louder in response to the crying of other babies, more than equally loud and distressing sounds. This innate empathy for others is the starting point for our caring, for our moral sense, and the groundwork for what we call In this circle are principles. Not every child gets all their needs met. If the reciprocal feedback system breaks down or is incomplete, then the infant will seek other ways to get their needs met. One of the questions asked this past week in our Soul Matters group was, who taught you about caring? Of course, parents came up, but an awful lot talked about extended family members, like grandparents, as did the answer, myself. If you have never been adequately cared for, if you don't trust those who say they care, you must one day learn to care for yourself. This journey of maturity or of healing is usually a solo journey. As one begins to sense that there is an emptiness inside oneself or a sense of disconnect from others. Addictions like alcohol and drugs and overwork are substitutes for that self-caring. Street gangs and sports teams and theater companies and political parties can fill the need for connection and care, or at least some of the needs. And our relationships, too, meet our need to care and be cared for. But ultimately, we need to know how to care for ourselves first and then return it to the world and care for those who are in it. There are times when the need for care in the world is everywhere and endless. When your love is called on, when your empathy is pulled from you, when your values and principles demand that you take action, and you can't extend your caring to cover everything. That's when you need boundaries. A truly compassionate, caring person has excellent boundaries. I heard this recently, and I'm afraid I can't remember who said it. But as soon as I heard it, I knew it was true. A truly compassionate, caring person has excellent boundaries. The person who only ever cares, overcares, and carries others will eventually deplete themselves. We can't care for the world when we are depleted ourselves. We'll make ourselves sick. And then our caring comes from that thin, unwell place, that pushed, tight place. We overstretch and then need the people that we're caring for to somehow give us energy back. You've heard that high-strung, tense voice, I'm sure, at some point. I care and care and care and no one appreciates me. That's the voice of a person with poor boundaries. They need to stop giving away their care before they're overwhelmed. Saying no, as hard as it may be sometimes, becomes an act of self-care. Clear boundaries protects our heart from depletion so that the heart can stay open and continue to care. I won't make light of it. Those choices are difficult. When your heart is open and you can sense the needs of the world, the needs of people around you who need your care, it can be really difficult to say, no, I can't do that today. No, I can't make that meeting. No, I can't get to that rally. One doesn't even need outside pressures when the inside voices that are saying to you, do it, do it. You can make one more trip. You can push through this tiredness. This is important. They need you. Well, I hope you can hear the hook in that. The hook we create ourselves. We all have that inner voice that has the one argument that really challenges our boundaries. Could be, the world needs me, my son needs me, my mother, my father, my neighbor, they need me. Or, my principles require me to act. Or, my social conscience is moving me to do this. Or, it's just the right thing to do, I have to do it. Nothing wrong with any of these motivations. Just as Phil talked about guilt, there are places for these words, these motivations. They only become a problem when they break through our healthy, self-loving boundaries too many times. I ask that you protect your heart from caring fatigue, because the world really does need your care. This place, this community, is one of the healthiest, strongest, most spiritually mature choices that you could make to care for yourself. The strength in being a participant in this community, or any community like Beacon, such as Nelson, is that the circle of care here is bigger than one individual, even bigger than the sum of our parts. Communities like Beacon and Nelson are gathering of people who are moved by principle to care for each other and the world beyond. And our principles call us out into the world and push open the circle of care to embrace all existence, human, animal, plant, shadow and light, idea and feeling. We are called to include in our circle of care even that which makes us uncomfortable. We are asked to include in our circle of care people who have different ideas than ours, different faiths, who love Jesus or Buddha, Zoroaster. We're asked to include people who love facts and science, music and art. We're asked to include in our circle of care those who fall through society's cracks, the crack dealers and the street dwellers, the prisoners and the lawyers. We are asked to pay attention to the people and things that we would like, perhaps, to ignore. We are called to enter a greater circle of care. So when you are making your pledge to Beacon, remember that you are giving to a very large circle of care. Your reason and conscience may move you to make a financial pledge this year, but it is your heart that knows that what you give is transformed into something larger than its parts, something deeper than noble ideas, something higher than your ideals. Your financial giving, like tributaries to a giant river, flows into a circle of care. And then, because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, overflows its banks, reaching beyond this circle to embrace all circles. I mentioned at the beginning of my talk that this past week was a rough week. Sally died on Sunday, and then Eric was getting close to his end. I got a call late on Monday night from Audrey Taylor. Audrey is the president of the Beacon Board, and she keeps herself well aware of what is happening to the Beacon minister. So Audrey calls me late on Monday night, and she says, "Deborah, there's a meeting tomorrow on bylaws." Now, Beacon is in the middle of having to update its bylaws, so this is an important meeting. "Deborah," she says, "do you remember this meeting tomorrow on bylaws?" And yes, I said, yes, I will be there. "Deborah," says Audrey, "really?" "Bylaws? Do you really need to do bylaws this week?" And when I paused, Audrey pushed the point. "We have 2 years to figure out these bylaws." "Okay," I said, "I get it. I hear you. Thank you." "Good," she says. "You go and be with your family." Sometimes the minister needs ministering too. And that's what Audrey offered me. And her unexpected thoughtfulness of reaching out to me, suggesting that I could and just be with my family, was exactly what I needed. I needed help creating my boundary. I was cared for by Audrey, and by extension, because she represents every single one of you, by you. And to you, I say thank you. This is the circle of care that is this Beacon community.